Hey, Brendan.
Hey, Alan.
Welcome to another Not a Thing podcast.
Still going.
Yep. And I'm trying to not do the radio voice this week, so we're gonna just keep it in an even tone, nice, calm, normal.
Well, I think if you can speak like a normal person because you're in a normal home, it would balance out the weird soundingness of my voice. As I broadcast from my underwater habitat, my secret lair, if you will.
Yes, yes. How are those the attaching of lasers to sharks' foreheads going?
You know, I thought that was a little cliche, so I went with barracudas.
Excellent.
I think that they're. I mean, they're smaller, but they're still intimidating.
Yes. Yes.
I really liked Skyfall.
Yeah. Yes,
I've decided to devote my life to being a Bond villain.
It should still be a thing. I think it did second over the long weekend. Unfortunately, Twilight was kind of number one, but I think that'll go away. Because I think Skyfall demands a rewatch, and I'm pretty sure the new Twilight movie, I don't think it deserves a first watch, but...
I don't think we're the target demo, Alan.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough.
We'll leave that to Ted.
Hey, Ted.
Hey, Ted.
So I have to give a shout out. Do we do shouts out to other?
I guess so.
I'm gonna give a quick hello and thank you for a tip to listener to the podcast, friend of the podcast, Ross, who sent me kind of a sobering note via Facebook because apparently NASA and the Curiosity lander did not actually find anything. super earth-shaking and history booking in that vein. A couple weeks
more
ago,
like Facebooking.
Yeah, a couple weeks ago, the internet kind of erupted a little bit because someone was quoted as having a really good feeling about how the rover was going, and it sounded like maybe they had found something. Instead, he was not referring to a specific, rock sample or...
Face on the planet.
Yeah, unfortunately. He was only referring to the fact that they had put Curiosity on Mars. Just the actual whole of the mission itself, which, admittedly, is kind of a big deal. It is a thing. We've already declared it such. But we were kind of hoping for, some life on Mars, big psycho robot civilization, something. I don't know.
We had maybe he was on vacation when they made the first announcement that they landed, and he just wanted to jump on that bandwagon. Like, hey, it's still awesome.
That right. The also ran Twitter feed. His retweet was like a month late, kind of a thing.
He got iced out by Mohawk guy.
Bobak. Oh, I have to give him a lot of credit. I mean, I've been kind of doing a faux hawk thing recently, and I'm really liking it. But I don't know if I could do the full on with the stars in the on the side. That's just
you could go for Starburns.
Yeah. Oh, rest in peace, Starburns.
Starburns lives. Spoiler alert.
Yes.
Sorry.
Right. Sort of. Oh, Community, won't you come back?
February.
Has it been announced?
Yeah, I think it was announced for February.
Okay.
Something ending in a TH.
Okay.
But in the month of February.
Alright. Okay. Doable. So following up on the follow-up for NASA and Curiosity, there was an article that I just saw regarding self-driving cars, which we've talked about also on the podcast prior. And the fun thing about this article was that it points out that computers kind of by nature have no ethics built into them. They're just tools. And if cars are going to be driving by computer and making decisions about, you know, what lane you're going to be in and stuff like that, they also have to take ethics into account. And the thing that brings this, you know, most sharply into focus, at least in the article, was that they said, okay, your car is driving along and a bus cuts in front of you because it's a school bus or whatever. Do you swerve or do you, like, run into the bus because of, you know, how it's going? Or do you run into another car? And, you know, you might have to make, you know, the decision that is of what to do. But if a computer is doing it, are you going to be able to cede control to let the computer do that? And B, what is the computer going to do? I mean,
well, I think I solved that problem when last we discussed this. Is if everything is run by the computer, no one's going to get cut off.
Right. And I think that's also a part of it, right? Computers have to. It's going to become a liability for a human, a non-computer to drive when enough computers are driving, because you're going to be, there's no way you can react as fast as a computer can. You're not going to be involved in the traffic kind of calming and speed patterns and stuff like that. So you would have to have your own either lane, or it would have to be, you know, an all or nothing kind of computers and drivers situation. But even if computers are doing everything, there are still things that happen, like, you know, something malfunctions and a car careens into another car, or something stalls. There just have to be ways to that computers should deal with that. And I think for me, being kind of a science fiction geek, that always defaults back to the you know, Asimov's laws of robotics kind of thing. Mm-hmm. which the article also, you know, pointed out, you don't program computers that way. There's no natural language programming, like, don't harm yourself. You know,
you need to develop self-awareness first.
Right.
Before you even need to start worrying about that.
Yeah.
But I would say that even if there were to be accidents by computer-controlled cars, considering the statistics of roadway fatalities that we have currently,
mm-hmm.
How much worse can it be? I mean, getting in the car is one of the most dangerous things you can do.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the thing with that, I mean, it starts from the cars, and I think it's most kind of in play, like I said, when there is kind of a hybrid of humans and car and computers kind of controlling the wheel. But there are it's going to be either that or robot warfare is going to be where computer ethics has to come into play at some point. Cause it's, having, you know, a computer that can make the decisions of, I will take this life versus that one. I mean, that is kind of,
well, I think that's a dangerous path, giving robots that kind of ability.
Well, but
I mean, it was more like how we deal with drones now.
Yes.
There's a human controlling that drone.
That's true, right? It's not.
I mean,
it's
you could feasibly be controlling all the robots on the battlefield. You're just not. It's like avatars, but with less blue things and heavy-handedness.
Less Sam Worthington.
Yeah. Same word, like, to not a thing.
Yeah. I did not watch the second Clash of the Titans movie.
I didn't watch either of them.
I saw the first one and was kind of not as impressed. But
prove me wrong, Sam. Prove me wrong. That's nothing personal. I just think you suck. Prove me wrong. I would love it.
Well, I think the UAV argument, I mean, it is people controlling them. I guess it's not ever that the it's never like in a seek and destroy kind of mode. It never automatically acquires targets or anything like that.
Right.
Okay.
There was if you remember, there was an episode of Stargate, one of the many over 200 episodes, where there was the two different races that were warring on the planet, and they only used robots to fight each other.
Yes. I actually don't remember that, but I do remember.
No, because they got in like chairs and they controlled the planes. It was the one with the heavy water episode.
I do not recall this, unfortunately. There's.
Well, I'm sure someone out there listening has seen what I'm talking about.
Well, okay.
I'm not crazy.
Yeah. So another episode that I remember from Star Trek, the original series all the way back, was there was a planet where there were two sides that were at war, and the war was run completely via computer simulation. And the way it worked was, if the computer simulation said that you died, you had to go to the like, I forget what they called it. It was like life extinguishing chamber, essentially, in order to make good on the casualty rate of that fighting.
That seems like a terrible system.
Wow. We got a little off track here. So
yeah, there's no such thing as off track on a podcast.
But
it's the internet, man.
Yeah. Internet's pretty cool. So I think the short form for this is self-driving cars, still a thing.
Agreed.
Ethical computing, potentially a thing, but I liked your caveat. Only if the computer's actually become self-aware, do you start like worrying about that?
Which I'm not so sure that making computers self-aware is a good idea.
Yeah, maybe not exactly. Right. if movies have taught us anything,
yeah. For every one data, you get 1,000 homicidal maniacs.
Well, even in Next Generation, right? You had Data, and then you had Lore.
Yeah, that's 50-50.
Yeah, right. If that's as good as we can get, maybe we shouldn't do that.
Actually, no, 50-50 is not fair, because there was three of them.
Oh, good point. Oh, and don't forget Data's mom, right?
Outright, yeah.
Yeah, and then Lol, right?
Okay, so there's a lot. Okay, so like 5 to 1,000, whatever okay. It is.
All right.
You know, I just was thinking about yesterday. As good of an actor as Tom Hardy is, and he's in all these cool movies, he was in Star Trek Nemesis.
Yes.
Yes, playing he was. Patrick Stewart.
Yeah, I was super...
It's terrible.
Super disappointed with the way they did that. And my wife, who is a bona fide Star Trek fan, will back me up on this. Why is young Captain Picard bald? Why is the clone of young Captain Picard bald? Because in the episode where
when he gets his heart?
Yes, when he gets his heart hair. Like messed up and he gets stabbed, he has hair during the flashback. It's like
maybe it's a style thing? I don't know, he's Reman or whatever.
Right, yeah, you know, he's trying to show solidarity with his
yeah, none of his buddies had hair.
Yeah,
that would look kind of odd. He was already, you know, white.
Right.
So maybe that does make sense.
Oh, well, maybe.
Maybe they would associate that with something a Romulan would do, having hair.
Yeah, well, the Romulans all have that kind of bowl cut kind of thing going on.
There must be like a chain of barbershops there. They all just get the same haircut.
Right. Yeah, the Romulans are what happens if supercuts kind of became a global superpower and like everyone got their hair cut the same way.
But it's singular, super cut.
Super cut.
Romulan super cut.
Exactly. Okay.
I see your tangent, and I raise you a bigger tangent.
Yes, so an interesting thing happened to me on the way to the podcast today. The reason that we're recording this a little later than we normally do is because...
But they don't know that.
Yeah, I guess they don't. I mean, you're listening to it whenever you're listening to it, which isn't ever live. I mean, I hope you think that we're kind of with you or that you're with us when you're listening.
If you think it's live, you don't know how a podcast works. Don't try calling in.
Well, we've never really given out a phone number, so it's probably for the best.
What it's 555-1738.
Excellent. Anyway, if you could align your time frame to when we record this, which isn't a published kind of piece of data anyway, the thing that I did on the way in was I went to tech shop in Menlo Park. If you're not familiar with tech shop, it's kind of like a workshop where you can get certified and rent time on kind of generally heavier kind of shop equipment than you might have at home, like table saws or laser cutters or
what?
Yeah, they have a laser that you can use to etch metal or burn wood or whatever. It's actually pretty freaking cool. But I'm not certified. I'm looking into to checking stuff like that out. But I kind of need a project, I think, or I need some ideas for projects before I jump in. But anyway, what they were doing today was they were hosting the College of Lockpicking, which is its own kind of entity. They came in and did a workshop to show some stuff about how locks work and how and why they're kind of easy to pick and break into and
why you're not safe.
They gave us like the tools to like play around with lockpicking and stuff like that. And I think I'm 100% in favor of this. I mean, in California, there's no the way that the laws work, there's nothing that says that learning how to pick locks or having lockpick tools is in and of itself a crime. You have to show intent, like I'm gonna break into this thing,
or
I'm...
like if you started a blog of your exploits.
Or I'm clearly, trespassing and I'm carrying lockpicking tools. That's kind of, intent to, or showing intent to break and enter. Now, I'm not a lawyer, so please do not take that as, license to go do stuff. But it's, lockpicking has a lot of skill elements to it that are, kind of rooted in, like, just manual dexterity and kind of coordination and like visualization of the lock, because you have to kind of know what you're doing in order to know how locks work. I mean, there's a lot of rigor in it. I mean, there is obviously stuff that you can do to destroy a lock very easily and break into it, but that's not kind of what the lockpicking class is about.
That's what you do side missions for, right? To increase your dexterity and lockpicking skills.
Right, I have to level it up.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. So the thing that it shows is that locks are really there to keep kind of honest people honest. Like if a normal reasonable person walks past the door and it's locked, they're not going to try and force it. But a dishonest person is already dishonest to begin with, and is already outside of the realm of what you can do to help, I think.
did they make you swear an oath or sign anything saying, "I will do no evil"?
Yeah, there's essentially a don't pick any locks that you don't own is the rule that they kind of put out there. And it's, I think that pretty much covers it. I mean, you're not going to, or you should not use whatever skills you learn to break into a place. I mean, that's,
you should break into your office.
Clearly bad. What?
You should break into your own office. I mean, obviously you could just get in anyways, but you're allowed to be there. I figured, oh no, I forgot my key card.
Yeah, that's an electronic lock. That would be very impressive to
you swipe a credit card through it, right?
I don't know.
I haven't taken the class. Like, you're taking the class.
Yeah, we took a class with lockpick tools, so metal, like, pointy things and stuff. So, you know,
no heists yet.
No, not quite yet. I found that my skill level is kind of low. My wife's skill level is a bit higher. She was able to pick a 5-pin lock that I was not able to pick.
So, oh, she's sneaky.
Yeah, I got to keep an eye on that one. But I thought it was fun. I mean, it was really interesting to kind of get, you know, some insight on the locks. And there was a little bit of a practical kind of tip that went through that, I guess. There is kind of a known locksmithing scam, actually, that of putting, like, you know, hey, if you're locked out, call this number, business cards around it, like, especially apartment buildings, and you call them to you know, thinking they're a, you know, bonded locksmith to come and unlock your door, and then they essentially you know, railroad you when you get to the point of, okay, well, I opened your door, but I opened it by drilling it out, and now it costs $500 instead of, you know, what it's supposed to cost, and now your door's open, so what are you going to do about it? You know, whereas an actual locksmith would be like, I got to get out of here, so I'm going to fix this right away, and then I'll take a credit card, I'll take whatever, you know, kind of payment you want to get me out of here as fast as I can because I'm paid by the hour. So that was an interesting you know, a bit to kind of point out. I've never locked myself out such that I needed a locksmith to get in, but I know someone that did, and I came over because I thought if the locksmith couldn't open the door, the plan was to, you know, bring her back to my place, and then she would just stay over until her friend, who, you know, was out of town, who had a key, could get her back in. But it was pretty fascinating. I mean, the guy came in, and I would say within 10 minutes had already defeated the lock. And then because he had decided that, or, you know, decided that the reason it failed was because the lock was just old, went ahead and replaced it in like even less time. It was really impressive.
It's like when you lock your keys in the car, it's so embarrassing that within 5 seconds of the guy showing up, it's like, okay, your door's open.
Yeah. Yeah, and so it's a cool, I think it's a cool skill to learn. I think you know, doing it, I mean, aside from doing it as a profession, I think just doing it as a, like, here's how to build a small level of skill and kind of work on it, because there is a fair amount of skill and kind of geekery that goes into, like, learning how it works and learning how to defeat it. I mean, there was a really interesting key set that he showed that normally the keys have, you know, the little bumps in them. I mean, to put it mildly, right? I think they're called wards. But anyway, the bumps in the key, you know, push pins up and down, and that's how the lock kind of unlocks. He showed us a key that for a lock where not only do the bumps push the pins up and down to reach kind of a you know, a common point so you can turn the tumbler, the pins are actually turned like 45 degrees or 90 degrees by the bumps, because the way the bumps have like a little kind of bit of a twist on them. So you can't just rely on like pushing the pins up and down. You have to be able to turn the pins left and right as well. And it's just like, oh my gosh, I don't even know how you do that. So, it's impressive. The stuff that goes kind of into building the security system and then into defeating the security system. And it's the kind of stuff that, I like kind of the gray skills, you know, for lack of a better term, that are like that, like hacking. I mean, I really enjoy, like reading about, defeating, passwords and, kind of, you know, cryptography and stuff like that. I mean, I, you know, the stuff involved in that is interesting from kind of an academic perspective, and it's, I think it also it, because of the arms race that's built into like having more security and then people defeating that security, I think that pushes towards more. It goes one of two ways. It either goes to a kind of police state mentality where you lock down the ability to look at stuff and think about stuff, or it pushes towards a more secure kind of state where you can you have privacy and you have things that are actually secure and more secure than they would be otherwise. So yeah, lockpicking. I thought it was cool. I think it should be a thing.
Just not, you know, what it's done to your house.
Right. Right. Well, that's the thing. What I want to do is get, I have to look around to see if I have a spare lock for the doors I have, but I want to take one of my locks in to a locksmith and see if they'll sell me the same model of lock and key it the same way. And then I want to try and pick it, because I have to now. I mean, I think it's
what, can you just pick your door?
Well, so that's interesting. Because
or you might break it.
Yeah, that's the worry, because I guess most keyways and stuff are made of brass, and the picks that they give you are steel, and so that's harder than the brass is, which means that if you're just kind of messing around with a lock, over time it will kind of wear it down and it might render it inoperable, and you don't want to do that to your front door.
In the rock paper scissors of metals, steel wins.
Yes. Yeah, and I guess if you used you could use something softer, but then your picks would wear out, right?
It'd be better to have a pick wear out than break your lock.
Probably. Or, you know, but for the cost of a lock, you know, getting it rekeyed the same would be just as good, I think.
Right.
So that's my kind of fun, interesting thing to learn this week. Another thing that is pretty cool to learn was I just saw an article for Speed Reading by Tim Ferriss. It's on his blog, which I think it's still 4hourworkweek.com. Yeah. And I don't know if it's the number 4 or the word 4.
It's probably both.
Yeah, it's probably both. Those people have figured out how the internet works. But
if not, his webmaster should be fired.
Yeah, right. So it's Tim Ferriss, for those that don't know, is he bills himself as a lifestyle designer, I think. His first book was The 4-Hour Work Week, which was trying to optimize how you work in order to have more time for yourself or your own projects or things like that. And it's then he had a follow up, which was The 4-Hour Body, which was ways to optimize your own kind of body for things like weight loss or any changes that you want to make to your body, just
Or some chapters on making changes to other people's bodies.
Ho, ho! Yes, I believe that was that as well. So his whole thing is that there's a lot of kind of experimentation that can be done, and he approaches a lot of his stuff in, I think, a fairly rigorous experimental pattern, but it's always kind of self-experimentation, it looks like.
Well, it's self-experimentation and then retested with a larger group.
Yeah.
Just from reader feedback.
Yeah, and I think that's, it speaks to me from a, you know, as a Cal Poly grad, the old learn by doing kind of stuff, which I think is cool. But he has a new book out, The 4-Hour Chef, which is mostly about cooking and kind of ways to optimize your cooking techniques and stuff, which I think is really cool. I mean, I should read all of these. so it's a shame that I actually haven't, is the thing that is the biggest bummer to me, is that I like reading kind of about them, but I haven't really put any to task yet. And so this one, I want to do. It's it was an article about speed reading, and it was saying that you can increase your reading speed by like 3 times. And the way that he describes it is you have to change the way of reading from a very kind of when you read a line of text, it's not a smooth kind of progression. You kind of jump from kind of word or group of words, you know, as you go, and then if you might have to like jump back if you get distracted or whatever, and so you'll miss like part of it, and you'll jump back and then reread a word or things like that. And it's based around, you know, you just have to train your eyes to move kind of horizontally and smoothly, you know, along that, first of all, and then train your eyes to kind of read peripherally and read with a wider field of view, so you can take in more words at once, essentially. And what I thought was interesting was that it does seem to net you an increase in speed, but it might actually reduce your comprehension. So one of the things that it says at the end of the article, which I thought was really funny, was that you can read 300% faster, supposedly, right? So, but instead of reading 3 things in the amount of time that would read 1 thing, he recommends if you really, really need to learn it, like if it's something you're studying for, you should read the same thing 3 times, because you can read it 3 times as fast. So just read it 3 times, so you'll get all the benefits of comprehension, which essentially means read it at your normal speed. So you've saved no time, but potentially you've gained comprehension because you're reading it 3 times instead of once. I think that would be where the rubber meets the road, is if you're actually comprehending it more by reading it 3 times than reading it once, kind of slowly and a little maybe more methodically.
Yeah, I read the exercises that he said to do, and I actually found that I already do some of that stuff.
Yeah.
So I don't read that fast, as fast as they say that you can read, but and I don't adhere to all of it, but I do read pretty quick, and some of that stuff is what I do. So I don't know. I guess it works, at least to a degree.
I agree. I mean, I think one of the tips is is that if you read kind of with like something like a pen or your finger kind of tracing along to kind of to keep your spot, it'll train your eye muscles to be able to move kind of in the right direction, and then it kind of moving your finger kind of dictates your pace, so keeping a smooth pace is better for kind of increasing your speed if you're looking to increase speed. And There was another kind of bit about like if you can start reading by looking like a couple words in from the very left edge of the line, so you're almost skipping words. I mean, you're not looking directly at every word, you're just kind of looking past them all and taking them in. And I know that those things, I mean, I agree that I kind of already do them, but I've never focused specifically on them in this way. And that was one of the things that I think is really good about his writing in general, but this exercise specifically was just that he breaks it down to there's a technique that you have to learn, and then there's a speed, and then here's how to increase the speed building upon that technique. And I think that level of instruction is going to be the way that you get it, rather than just saying, you know, read these couple lines and then, you know...
just read faster.
Right. Just time it and read faster. That. I mean, there's not a... I think by giving you concrete ways to break it down and learn how to do it faster or more efficiently or better, that's the best way to approach it. And from the stuff that I have read of his, it's always this way. He always breaks it down to kind of component parts and digestible things, and you know, and builds kind of a progression. And that's really how, you know, people are geared to learn. So I thought that aspect of it was really good. Where was I going with that? So yeah, I do want to read his other books. I really should just read them before, you know. I don't want to be one of those guys that just reads the excerpts and is like, oh, well, now I'm going to talk about this guy because I read an excerpt from him. That's like...
No, having read the excerpts from his books and then I actually read 4-Hour Body, I've read it a couple times, actually. Mm-hmm. It's a pretty short book. Okay. But you definitely don't get everything out of it unless you do get down and read it.
Yeah.
They're easy reads, you know, and helpful.
Yeah, and I think that's also part of, I mean, coming back to just, you know, speed reading in general, I think what, you know, the material is obviously going to dictate how quickly you're going to want to read it.
Yeah.
Like, the last fiction book I read was John Scalzi's Red Shirts, which I thought was a really, really engaging good book, and it's fun, it's good fiction. Definitely go out, read it. John Scalzi's Red Shirts, a thing. But
yeah, I read that cover to cover.
Yeah.
I didn't stop. I read the whole thing straight through.
Yeah, me too. Me too. I was on an airplane, so I had a couple I had nothing else to do. I mean, I didn't want to watch I think it was The Amazing Spider-Man was my choice, so I think I chose
Not a
wisely.
Thing.
Yeah, I think I chose wisely on that one. But I'd read what was it? There was another book that I was reading and I thought was gonna be a really kind of cool, interesting topic. It was called I'm not gonna remember it. It was a book about the comic industry and kind of the pre-code comic industry and how that whole kind of situation was kind of messed up and destroyed. And I thought it was going to be a really interesting book, which it was for about a fifth of it. Unfortunately, the whole rest of it, I felt was saying kind of the same refrain kind of over and over again, which was that people were misunderstanding kind of what comics were, and I still think it's true. It's just that you know, American culture has kind of reduced comics to a, you know, mostly kids kind of thing. And anyway, the book was not really well written from that point of view, and that was a shorter book than Red Shirts, and that took me, oh, golly. I mean, I would read it like for as long as I could stand it before going to bed.
Before you fall asleep.
No, I wouldn't fall asleep. I would just get, I would just feel drained. Like, I didn't want to read anymore. Like, it was,
That doesn't sound like a good book.
No. And I you know, it's probably best that I don't remember the name of the title, because I don't want to destroy this guy's book. My wife read it and she thought it was good, but, maybe she had a higher tolerance for this guy's writing style. But anyway, the short of it, if I can even get there, was that the what you're reading, I think, you know, will dictate a little bit about the speed that you read a book. Or
I've never read slower than when I've tried to read a textbook.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can read a novel in a night, but put a textbook in front of me and it's like reading a dial-up.
That's a good analogy. I like that. Cool. Well, we have a few minutes left. So, in that few minutes, we want to highlight a couple kind of entertainment-y things. I haven't seen any new movies in the last week. Have you, Brendan?
I haven't seen any new movies. I mean, I've seen movies, but okay. Nothing new.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
I don't think we need to review the movie I got roped into on Thanksgiving with my family.
Oh?
Mean Girls.
Oh. Well, at least you didn't watch the Liz and Dick story with Lindsay Lohan, which apparently was kind of a travesty. I watched, I think it was on Gawker, they put like all the clips of her like sighing or, you know, just kind of acting by looking off into another direction. And they cut them all into like this video, which is like 6 minutes long. It's great. But anyway, the things I've been watching, I think you can agree with me. The Walking Dead is coming up to its mid-season finale this Sunday. And if you haven't been watching, you should find a way to see all of the episodes in advance of this coming Sunday, because I think it's going to be pretty epic.
Yeah. Yeah, if you're not watching that show, you are the undead.
What's been on your DVR?
I've been... Well, I don't, not necessarily on my DVR, but I have been able to view via certain gray means. Dexter is maybe having its best season ever.
Wow.
The John Lithgow season, two years ago, was really good. But this year, I think, is on par or better.
Wow.
Yeah, Ray Stevenson, great, great guest character. Yeah, it's really good. And the other show, Boardwalk Empire. I not as many people seem to be watching that as I would think. But Steve Buscemi, he does a great job on that show. It is slow. They'll have like 10 episodes, and the first 8 are the slowest burn you'll see on TV. But every season, the last 2 episodes, it just blows your mind.
Yeah,
so it's all that waiting.
My mother-in-law had a similar kind of thing. She we went to go visit her on Friday. And when does Boardwalk Empire air? Is it on Fridays?
It's on Sundays.
Oh, okay. Well, she that's what the thing was. So she has DirecTV, and I guess DirecTV had some kind of crazy satellite meltdown over Thanksgiving week. And so, like, she records a lot of TV and then watches it kind of whenever she wants. And she was telling me that something like 3/4 of the shows that she'd recorded were cut off in some way.
No.
Like the beginning of the show or the end of the show. And one of the shows was apparently Boardwalk Empire. And so she watched it all the way to the last 10 minutes and then was like, oh my God, I can't miss these last 10 minutes. And so on Friday, we were driving up Thursday night after, after eating it, my parents, and we got there, and she was watching the show, and she's like, I can't record it, just let yourself in, and like, get set up, I have to finish the rest of this episode. It's like, oh, okay, whatever.
No, good
to see you too,
true.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Give thanks for Boardwalk Empire, that show's great. The last two cliffhangers of the last 2 weeks have been amazing.
Excellent. So the one last thing for this week, I think, is a Twitter account that I just found out about. It's called @StealthMountain, and I'll link it in the show notes. But Stealth Mountain I'm pretty sure it's a bot that just looks for people that tweet the word sneak peek, but they spell it sneak, SNEAK space PEAK instead of PEEK, and then it replies to them and just says, this is all it says, I think you mean sneak peek, and then spells it correctly. And
I really hope it's a bot.
And then what it does is it retweets the tweet that they made with the incorrect spelling, and then it retweets their reaction. And it's, so if you go to at Stealth Mountain, its Twitter feed is pretty much just mistake and then reaction, mistake and reaction the whole way down. And it is phenomenal the way that people react to getting corrected on Twitter. It is, if you've ever wanted to see like the most like vitriol and hate in like in a person, you have to go to at Stealth Mountain and look at these reactions. It's just amazing.
I mean, I scrolled down for quite a while, back a few months on their favorite list,
mm-hmm.
and there's not a single one that's positive.
Yeah.
They're all just like, die, I will kill you.
Yeah. So I think we have to declare that a thing. Don't misspell sneak peek.
Yeah, misspelling sneak peek should not be a thing.
Right, but if you do,
but the Twitter account calling you on it should be.
Right, if you do know that there is a kind soul out there looking out for you. Excellent. Well, that's all I have for this week, Brendan. I don't know. You had anything else you wanted to plug? Do you get any further in NaNoWriMo? I think this is probably the last time we're going to talk about it.
No. Okay. I started a new job, and I have not had time to do anything.
Well, that should be a thing, if nothing else.
Yes. Well, I think I hear a fire in the lab in Sector B of my underwater water lair, so I should probably go check that out before something terrible happens and I die of asphyxiation down here.
Yeah, that's a good call. We would love to have you back next week.
Yes. Until next time.
Okay.